Hello and welcome to another Writer's Bookshelf with me, David Driver. And today's episode is going to be all about owls and a little bit of a background. I'm going to read you and share three stories from the anthology Mr. Yink's Stories and Other Fantastic Tales. And this is all inspired by owls, and very sort of, well, in the shortest way I can tell the story, I've always liked owls. I've always had a fascination, if you like, and I think we do have a connection with animals. People might think, owls or cats, tigers, that sort of thing. I love owls. Always have done, the barn owl and that sort of thing. And again, it lends itself to writing and stories and poetry and that sort of thing. If you live in Silsden in West Yorkshire, the UK, in the Memorial Gardens, there was a tree, really lovely tree, and it did get chopped down, and a little bit of development was there with where the old library used to be. And in typical sort of form, you think, goodness, more development, they are going to, the chopping trees down. But I did find out it was an old tree, and it was dying, really, the tree. There's nothing anyone could do. So the tree had to go. But I don't know the gentleman's name, but he came out and did some chainsaw magic. And if you ever visit Silsden and you go into the Memorial Gardens, there's a lovely... there's two owls that have been chainsawed, if you like, out of the tree stump, and that features on the cover of the story. So I've got that in mind, and there used to be. I haven't seen him for a while. I'm presuming it's male or female. I forget now, because there's a guy who lives by us who has an owl. I want to say in captivity, it's okay because it was born in captivity. It wouldn't survive in the wild, so it does have an owl. And there's another owl that flies over the park and over the rooftops and that sort of thing. And then down at the studio, if you've been to the studio or possibly seen some of the pictures, just behind me, I'm pointing, you can't see, but I'm pointing anyway. Just behind me, excuse me, I have an owl. It's like just a model, just a... an ornament, really, on the wall. So that's where the inspiration came from. And but there's a writing group. These sort of started before lockdown, goodness. And we had a writing group with Cobberdale Quills. Some of the stories I've been sharing were from from Winter Tales, which was the first writing group. And we went to a second one called Mr. Yink's Stories and Other Fantastic Tales. So I'll share these three with you and see what you think. And Mr. Yink's was the the story went where we also wrote in similar themes, Mr. Yink's Stories. And if I remember rightly, just give me a moment because I'm going to get this right. Some of them had sort of themes, and I named the owl Mr. Yink's. So I hope I do it a little bit of a little bit of justice. I have noticed, completely off a tangent, I'm recording this. It's just mid morning, and it's quite sunny, nice and bright, and I have to say it does affect when I was doing live radio. I think it was. There's ups and downs, if you like, pros and cons to each. And 99.9% of my radio shows were live. When you do a live show, it gives you a real thrill. You know, you're live on air, the microphone's live, you've got to do the news and travel, and you're doing you're reading the news and the travel, and you're reading, you're maybe interviewing people or talking and playing the music, and there's a real buzz. And podcasting is a little bit different because you can do I always do a live interview, and what I mean by that is I don't broadcast it live, as in send it out when it's happening, but I just get my guest behind the microphone, interview, and we have a laugh and a joke, and I don't really edit it. I mean, obviously, if he was, if you know, some pause in the, a massive pause, I'd have to cut that bit out. But you know, if we're laughing and joking or coughing, it's just all as in unedited is the way to say that. And I think that's good. But when you sort of read it, or when I'm reading now, it's, I just find with the weather, we are sort of mood creatures, aren't we? Creatures of habit and that sort of thing. And if it's cold and rainy and damp, you've got to lift yourself to do a reading. And sometimes if you're feeling a bit happier in yourself, then it's better. It's just the way it is, you know. You can it does affect. But I think in a way, live radio sort of perks you up instantly. And then sometimes when you are podcasting, not if you are interviewing, it's different. Or if you've got someone in the studio with you, that's fine. But I think if you're on your own, you've got to lift yourself a little bit more. Anyway, now these are available via Amazon if anybody wants to sort of purchase one. It's called Mr. Yink's Stories, and it goes like this. As the magnificent bird of prey closed in, black talons could be clearly seen under the haunting light of a full moon, and Mr. Yink's wondered what would happen next. Many things had happened over the last few days, and now a message from the great wizard of the north, delivered by his most trusting owl, Meek. Mr. Yinks had found a number of dead rats in his traps with green eyes, and he'd also had to battle a rather nasty blue shadow several nights ago. These foul creatures would possess a human's body in order to seek answers for their masters. All these happenings meant only one thing. The dead from the swamplands were on the move. To most people in the village, Mr. Yinks was a lonely gamekeeper type figure who had lived in the old cottage. He preferred the company of animals to humans, spent most of his time patrolling the woods, liked fish and chips on a Friday, and was occasionally seen in the pub having a pint. In reality, he was one of the seven chosen guardians who served the wizards. Meek perched on the branches of the oak tree, and Mr. Yinks pulled out the great orb from inside his coat pocket, which allowed him to communicate with the owls. Mr. Yinks, the words sounded inside the guardian's head as the orb floated above. Meek, it's good to see you again. Likewise, but you don't bring good news. I'm afraid not. I've had to deal with a blue shadow. The wizard is aware. Will the vulture call? Tonight. Good. He's in the barn. An army approaches. Rats? Yes, but their commander resides in the village. Who? Miss Tarly. The new shop owner? Yes, I'll deal with her. When shall we know when you have? And then we shall deal with the rats. At these words, Meek stretched out his wings, and an army of barn owls appeared on the branches of the trees. Silent, watching, waiting, these magnificent birds perched like lords of order, awaiting instruction. Quickly moving across the ground, Mr. Yinks was almost as silent as Meek, who glided above. An all-watchful eye, a deadly assassin, rolled into one. These two had worked together on many occasions and formed a formidable partnership. As the gnarly oak door flew open, Meek landed on the lazy smoking chimney pot and stared out into the clear night. Weapons were collected along with a number of traps that would be needed to capture a certain type of opponent. A flask of coffee and a packet of hobnobs were also put in the bag. It would be a long night and maybe get a little chilly outside while she waited for your target to make a move. Meek wasn't a coffee lover and was partial to a crumbly hobnob. The pair waited on the edge of the woods, looking out across the village green and into the shop window. They shared a few tales of past adventure along with the odd laugh. After several hours, a sleek black panther strutted down the ice street, its eyes absorbing all the nighttime happenings. It was Miss Tarly. Yinks put down his binoculars. What? He glared at Meek. Well, we don't have your eyes. We don't all have your eyes, do we? My eyes are perfect. Is that so, Meek? Well, so are these. Grabbing his nighttime equipment once more, the duo watched as the panther took human form and entered the shop. Meek took to the skies and Yinks covered the ground. Soon, they were outside the shop. Miss Tarly was moving boxes in the back room. Miss Yinks tried the door, and not to his surprise, it was locked. No words were needed, and the barn owl took flight once more. The shape-shifting shopkeeper must have had a little backup somewhere in the village. There! The sharp eyes of the owl spotted the yellow smoke almost instantly. They'd gathered further up the high street. Three of them. These wispy creatures could hide themselves in the lamplight of the street lighting and strike in seconds with deadly accuracy. Death normally came by strangulation when coils of smoke would slowly wrap around the victim's throats. Other bodies had been found unrecognizable, as these bidders of the dark forces could transform themselves into whips which would strike from nowhere and beat the person to the ground, only stopping when the task was complete. Circling above, almost ghost-like, Meek took the fight to the enemy. He peeked, stopped mid-air, and effortlessly turned. Wings tightly tucked in, attack speed was reached as the barn owl descended into a dive. A smoky tendril lashed out, then another as the trio realised they were under attack. More whips struck and the cloud of putrid smoke divided into three. Blow after blow came and Meek flew on. A silver glow surrounded him. He'd summoned his shield and the yellow whip strikes were useless. This quite remarkable barn owl vanished into one of the clouds of smoke and out of the other side. No time to waste, as he vanished into a second. Black talons did the deal. Just under the left ear was the target, as this would render a yellow smoke unconscious, and Meek had the best talons in the business. As two of the putrid creatures descended to the ground like a discarded carrier bag, more barn owls appeared, carrying a net of spider thread, and the enemy was caught. The third soon fell to the same fate. The thread was from the arachnids of the moon woods and would hold any living beast, no matter how powerful. Another danger dealt with, and they were taken to the barn to join the blue shadow, where they would await collection by the vulture. It's done. Meek's voice sounded in Yink's mind, and he wasted no time. Metal snapped, hinges broke, and the door flew open. Electricity crackled as Mr. Yinks threw in a small orb. Dancing around the floor and licking the walls, the blue field of energy swept across the ceiling and into the back room. You foolish man, as the words poured, claws ripped down Mr. Ink's back, drawing blood. Another strike across his thigh and he fell to the floor. Wild claws savagely attacked and pain surged through the man's body. Intense white light filled the room, accompanied by a high-pitched screech. Yinks jumped to his feet, and as the black mist fell to the floor, it manifested into human form. The guardian spun his staff, striking twice. Groans sounded, but as he went for a third hit, a black tentacle lashed out and knocked him off his feet. Quickly back up and alert, his trusty oak staff blocked blow from the oily black tentacles lined with his sharp razor talons. Fire ran along the staff and struck out at the dark beast. The form was replaced with the claws of the panther, and then Vitali shapeshifted into human form. Several swift blows dazed her, long enough for him to produce a silver jar. As the lid was removed, she let out a scream of defeat and pain. And slowly, the life form known as Miss Tali was sucked as black wispy smoke into the ancient vessel and the lid firmly placed on the top. "You took your time." "Really?" Mr. Yinks replied to Mick's sarcastic comment. "Well, never mind. It's your turn again." As the victorious garden stood in the doorway to the shop, silver jar in hand, he looked up and smiled. Meek led the army, an army of owls, magnificent in flight, heading out to confront a foul, poisonous legion of rats. Like a single arrowhead, they flew above the rooftops, just on the edge of the village. The drain cover lifted and out poured black rat after black rat, accompanied with a putrid stench of evil. Their green eyes pierced the darkness, searching for victims. Meek gave the order, and they switched to attack formation. He stayed out front along with four others. The rest divided into two, Sunkbank left, others right, all tucked in their wings, reaching full battle speed. And the night-time dead body count soon mounted. Black talons ripped and sliced, beaks killed instantly. Some rats were ascended to the night sky and then dropped to their death. As the minutes passed, the green-eyed rodent numbers soon plummeted. They were no match for the owls of the wizard. A handful of the winged birds of prey did fall victim as the rats leapt onto their wings and ripped out feathers. The battle ended, and the owls perched on walls and rooftops. The guardian spoke. "That's how you do it, Yinks. Don't start. Don't start your barn owl. You're the old one. Me? I'm not old." As the two continued, the beat of heavy wings could be heard. "The vulture approaches. I think you're right, Mr. Yinks. Let's go to the barn." Along with the army of owls, they made their way to where the collector of death would descend and gather the foul creatures. Wings slowly beat, then stopped as the 20-foot-high vulture came to rest. Waiting patiently, it slowly glanced around. The rats were dropped into giant nets. The yellow smokes struggled to escape from their temporary prisons, and the blue shadow hissed each time its flesh touched the iron bars and burnt. Miss Tali was just about to join him when a white mist appeared, and from within came the wizard. "I shall take her myself. Both of you stay alert. Mr. Yinks, Meek, will stay with you for now. I must return, but we will speak soon." With that, he vanished, and as quickly as he appeared, the giant bird took flight once more, taking with it its cargo. The rats will be dropped into the volcanoes of the south, and the others taken to the prisons of the east. "Well, Meek, it's Friday." "Friday?" "Yes, Friday. And that means one thing only." "Which is?" "It's apple pie day." "Apple pie day?" "That's right. But first a bath and a little sleep will not go amiss. Dawn approaches. The villagers will soon be up and about their business, and we have a long day ahead of us." "We do?" "Yes, we need to check some of the streams on the higher trails." "What for?" "Can't tell, you know. It's a water ghost, isn't it?" "Water ghost?" "Yes. Don't be silly." "I've never been silly. Anyway, I am tired. the two good friends made their way back to the cottage, where they refreshed and rested themselves. The following day, they investigated streams and on their return, enjoyed a good laugh, and the apple pie was mouth-watering delicious. So I do hope that you enjoyed that one. My apologies for nearly dropping the book. I flicked the page over and nearly dropped it all over the place. But there you go. Okay, this next one is, it goes by the title of Midnight Tales. Okay. And it's in a similar vein. See what you see. You think of this one. There's three sort of different types of three different stories, all in a similar vein of owls and mythology and that sort of thing. Okay. Vinny walked home all alone. The midnight air was starting to bite. A few drunks staggered and sank along the high street, and the usual concoction of takeaway orders flavoured the air. Silsden lay silent, ducks rested, and the willow trees hauntingly loomed like watchful guardians. The 15-year-old boy quickened his pace. He didn't like it, and feeling the loose change and mobile in his pocket, Vinny knew the latter would bring tears. It was dead, uncharged, lifeless, and he knew his mother would be beside herself with worry. Vinny Reed thought about his dad. He was dead too. He died 11 years ago, and mum and son had struggled on. She'd be sat waiting, crying, and then leap up, throw her arms around him and repeatedly say she couldn't bear to lose him. But things had gone wrong from the start. His mum had bought him a new pair of jeans, and someone had spilt Coca-Cola down them as soon as he had got onto the train. The mobile phone charger was obviously not working, as he discovered halfway through the journey, but the phone was old anyway, and people at school ridiculed him about it. Vinny had hoped to enjoy the concert and finally be accepted by others, but it wasn't to be. The usual bullies were there. He'd ended up with a fat lip, left the concert early, missed the train, and had to travel back on the Crazy Last Carriage, as it was best known. A man old enough to be his father sat next to him and gave Vinny the history of AC/DC and how he was once young. This aging rock fan was a little drunk, but kind of likeable. He also kept away any more trouble due to his size. Home wasn't too far away as he levelled with the memorial garden, and a half smile escaped as Vinny looked at the newly carved owls. Looking away, his eyes quickly shot back as one stretched out its wings and turned to look at Vinny. The second owl followed suit, and now both stared. They were no longer wood, but a silvery white. Effortlessly, they glided towards him, coming to rest on the wall. So this is him. The voice was female. Indeed, said the second owl. And does he speak? I'm not sure. Well, ask him. Do you speak? A temporary pause. Do you speak? I'm Vinny Reed. The words were difficult to get to speak, with a dry throat and a little fear in your veins. We know you are, the female claimed, and now we know you speak. Are you afraid? The male asked. Afraid? Sometimes. Sometimes? Why sometimes? Again, the male asked. Because of school, because of bullies, because you miss your father, the female owl answered the question. At these words, the young man held back tears and began to shake. Perhaps you should come with us, Vinny Reed. Again, it was the female who spoke. And before any protest could be made, not that he would have, He was scooped up within the talons and flying above rooftops. Higher and higher they flew. Houses vanished and only fields and woodlands remained. Speed increased as they followed the twists and turns of the river below. Vinny stayed frozen, eyes wide, heart thumping, and the owls just laughed out loud. A magnificent waterfall loomed up ahead, shimmering with hues of red and blue. "Nearly there, Vinny Reed. Not long now," the male informed him, "and you'll get to meet the Viking King." Descending, they landed on what looked like a stone ledge. As Vinny's feet touched the stone, the owls flew away. Panic set in. Then he noticed a door in the rock face that wasn't there before. Opening it, the young man entered and was greeted by a roaring fire. "Join me," instructed a voice. Vinny approached with caution. "Sit. Sit, Vinny, and warm yourself by the fire." As he did so, he cast a glance to his left, and there he sat, a real Viking. Grey beard, hair plaited, helmet and axe by his side. Flames warmed his huge hands as he held them up in front of the fire. And when he turned to look at Vinny, his smile and gentle blue eyes warmed him. "I am Alax, the Viking King. Don't be afraid, my young friend. We have many things in common."
We do?"
Vinny swallowed. "Yes, our fathers died when we were young. We were not accepted by the other children. We felt alone. But above all else, we are warriors. We want to help and protect. I want to show you some things. That's why Lothar and Anya brought you here. Now, watch the flames." As the boy looked on, the flames flickered and images appeared. It was Silsdin, Finny's house. The scene speeded up. Same place, different time. A Viking village. Men, women and children all went about their business. Fires burnt and all seemed calm. A small red-haired boy helped his mum fetch water. Vinny guessed the boy was Alax. Other children ridiculed him, along with some adults. His mother looked on tearful. Alax got into too many fights and always lost. But an old warrior met Alax in secret and taught him how to fight hand to hand and how to use the axe and sword. And more images appeared. Two older boys pushed the young redhead to the ground and laughed. And he got up and pushed them to the floor. And soon he overpowered them. And then they left him alone. He fought off a wolf pack when the other youngsters ran and saved a young girl with green eyes. They became good friends, fell in love, married, and had many children. Word spread about Alex's bravery, and he earned the respect of everyone. An evil sorceress tried to steal his children, but he defeated her and also rescued Lothar and Anya, two shapeshifters who had been forced to do the bidding of the evil woman of the black arts. Alax became king and ruled for many years. He took on many quests and had countless fantastic adventures. In his old age, he asked a powerful wizard if he would be able to watch over Silsdin after his death. This wish was granted, and he was taken to the kingdom behind the waterfall, where the two shapeshifters joined him. When the library was moved to the town hall and the old oak tree cut down, two beautiful owls were carved from the wood. This was a perfect opportunity to further watch over the village, as Lothar and Anya could easily hide within the carvings throughout the day. If danger arose, they could simply fly away. But as the fire died down, the flame turned green and a giant serpent uncoiled within. Hissing, it swayed from side to side. Alex rose to his feet, but the reptile knocked him back down with a whip of its tail. He struck out several times and the Viking King struggled to stand. His axe was out of reach. And the cold-blooded killer readied for another strike. Without even thinking, Vinny moved, grabbing the axe. He sk- skidded along the floor and into the powerful hand of Alax. Picking up a log, the young man threw it into the dying embers, causing them to come back to life. The snake struck out, and as it did so, the Viking swung his axe and took off the serpent's head. Vinny, Alex called out, Alax called out as he rose to his feet, and the boy spun round, only to see two cloaked figures. One ran at him, landing a fist deep within his stomach. Breathless, young Reed fell to his knees. A second blow hit his jaw. Something inside him told him to get back up, and he did. Fist clenched, Vinny wading in, returning his blow to the jaw. The cloaked figure was sent flying. The second jumped on Vinny's back, but he instantly grabbed his arm, dipped his shoulder, and sent it crashing into the table. "Enough! Enough! Enough!" bellowed Alex. Suddenly, everything seemed back as normal, and the danger literally vanished. "Enough, Vinny. Enough, don't you think?" And then the Viking King began to laugh. "You see, when danger looms and people are in need, you find your inner warrior. I just called on a little magic and illusion to bring out yours." Both of them laughed. The pair talked more, and when they walked outside, the owls appeared, and Vinny was taken back to his here and now. Vinny returned and gave his mum a big hug. He hadn't quite worked out how he was going to, if at all, to tell her about the Viking King. When Monday came, the school website announced closure all week due to a faulty boiler, and that's when his life changed forever. He decided to go for a long walk on the moors and, to his complete astonishment, uncovered a Viking hoard. Vinny not only made the local newspaper, but the national ones too. He also qualified for a percentage of the find, which meant his mum could buy the house they rented, buy a new car, and they could both enjoy a number of long, well overdue holidays. He also put more than enough aside for his own future plans. Sadly, the boiler was fixed and the school reopened the following week. The two school bullies immediately spotted Vinny and thought they'd have a little fun. Without thinking, young Reed ducked the incoming fist, dealt one to the bully's chin, and sent him flying. The second moved quickly, but not quick enough. Two sharp punches landed, and soon he was seated on his backside with onlookers laughing at him. First lesson was biology, and a new student joined the class. She sat next to Vinny. "Hi, I'm Maya. I'm from Norway. Vinny Reed. Yes, I saw you this morning. You fight very well, and those bullies deserved it." Vinny smiled. He smiled for a long time and felt on top of the world. After the lesson finished, they continued to chat away, and he couldn't help smiling once more as he looked into Maya's green eyes. Good stuff indeed. And if you've been astute and listening, you'll know that was the second story, Midnight Tales. It was set in Silsden, one of the, for the writing group. What we did is, one of the things I decided I wanted the rest of the group to do is keep it on a theme of owls. A message, obviously the message there is bullying and finding your inner warrior and that sort of thing. I'm sure you've guessed that. And it was based in Silsden. And I did mention the owls. I just sort of use them in the story. Okay, I'll share the third one. It's only a fairly short one. And this one, it's, so the first one was interpret Mr. Yinks. The second one was set in Silsden and incorporated the owls. And this was called Tales of Mythology and Legend. And the reason there's more than one story of Tales of Mythology and Legend. So we all wrote a story under the same title. So let's have a look here. Okay, Tales of Mythology and Legend. Lenny Treacle was an average kid of 14. His older sister, Jenny, was going to university in September. Mum and Dad were both solicitors, and their family shared fantastic holidays abroad. He had plenty of friends, enjoyed playing football and tennis. But Lenny had one guilty pleasure, mythology. Greek, Roman, English, Indian, he loved them all. But 2 weeks ago, on his birthday, he received a present wrapped in old brown paper. The present was a book called The Apple Seeds of Life. No one knew who the birthday gift was from, but the 14-year-old hasn't slept much since. Jumping off the half-nine bus to town, he ran up the hill, climbed over the wall, raced across two fields, and found the stones which resembled a giant's hand. Just as the book had instructed, young Lenny offered a bag of copper coins to the sky and then cast them to the ground. Reaching into his rucksack, he pulled out a warm flask of coffee, a pork pie, a packet of crisps, and a packet of chocolate hobnobs. Taking a piece of yellow chalk, ancient symbols were drawn on the stone. Standing back, Lenny waited, but not for long. A gentle breeze came, carrying an unfamiliar scent. Thick red smoke billowed from under the stones. Slowly, it cleared to reveal an old man dressed in green and brown ragged clothes and a pair of sandals. Smiling, this stranger with the most brilliant blue eyes spoke. "Hello. I'm pleased to meet you, Lenny. I see you clearly received my birthday present. I'm hungry. It's starving, in fact. Come and sit here. Talk to me." Utterly gobsmacked, Lenny just about managed a reply. Who are you? Who am I? Who am I? Over the years, I've been called by many names, but I've become to be known as the Thousand-Year-Old Man. Without thinking, Lenny offered this stranger a drink and said he'd gladly share his food. His offer wasn't refused, and the meal was thoroughly enjoyed. Not much conversation had been made, but when the last biscuit was eaten, the man in ragged clothes stood, smiled, and spoke to Lenny Treacle. Come, take my hand, join me in a wonderful journey, and I will show you many things." The young man stood a little nervously. "Place this around your neck." More words came. He was given a plain white stone with an ancient symbol carved into it. The stone was threaded with a strip of black leather. Lenny gave the object one last glance, did as he was asked, and then held the man's hand. Cool air passed over them, and becoming warmer, it was accompanied by a myriad of colours and soothing music. Images blurred before his eyes, and then they stood in a barren wilderness with only a plain oak tree to see. "That door holds many secrets. It is the gateway to another life and should be opened by all. But sadly, it is not so. We must learn to live together." Smiling, he closed his eyes and the location changed. Bombs exploded, bullets fired, screams sounded in all directions, and a foul stench poisoned the surroundings. Aircrafts flew overhead, dropping more death and destruction, and a tank blew up before their very eyes. A gentle hand touched the boy's shoulder. "No harm will come to you. As the thousand-year-old man spoke, they both walked through the battlefield. Bodies lay broken and lifeless. Metal machines of destruction burned in twisted silence. Orders of attack were relentless, and the killing continued. For a moment, the vision of horror blurred, but another war was presented. Waterloo, Trafalgar, the English Civil War, the American Civil War, medieval battles, Roman campaigns, they were all the same. Religion was shown in many forms, along with places of worship, each at peace with the belief that they were carrying out the work of their books and gods. People starved, whilst others indulged in opulence beyond imagination. Elected, promised, fueled individuals expanded their bank accounts and waistlines. Forests, woodlands, rivers and wildlife all suffered under the ravenous onslaught of the species known as, as humans. Visions continued, and they walked through them. As the thousand-year-old man spoke, Lenny nodded and took all in. Time became inconsequential. The scene became clear once more, and they were stood in the barren wasteland with the oak door. "It was my birthday 2 weeks ago, Lenny." "Oh, happy birthday," came the reply. "I was 1,014 years of age. It's time for me to go. It's time for me to go through the door." Smiling, he whispered his name, and the boy laughed. He whispered another name and then spoke aloud. "This is your name now, and you must never speak it to another soul until it's time for you to walk through the door." A thousand-year man starts his journey 2 weeks after his 14th birthday. Maybe you will be the one that brings the human race together. The two hugged, and Lenny held back the tears. He had many questions to ask, but now knew that the answers would have to come from within himself. Will I? Lenny's question was cut short. "No, I'm afraid not. You will have to leave your family behind. You can travel to any time or place as we have done, but you cannot see your family in human form again." Human form? Lenny didn't quite understand the last part. The thousand-year-old man can take the form of a white owl. He whispered another name in the boy's ear and continued. "This word is only for you and will transport you. If you wish to travel in the present, it is the only way. Close your eyes, hold the stone, and speak the word only in your mind. You will be taken there." He spoke no more after that, only smiled, turned and walked through the door. Lenny was left in the barren wasteland, and the oak door had disappeared. He sat and thought and cried, remembered good and bad times, laughed and even sung his favourite song. Rising to his feet, he held the stone tightly, speaking a single word. The young boy vanished. Clouds drifted across a full moon, and the evening breeze rustled the branches of the deciduous oaks. Orange and yellow street lamps gave that autumnal glow to the roads lined with parked cars, and smoke plumed once more from the roar of open fires through the pots of Victorian chimney stacks. Eyes looked on in awe once again as the majestic white owl silently circled above the rooftops. The magnificent bird came to rest on the branch of a tree. No words were spoken. A mother and father shed a tear as the thought of their son. A sister remembered holding her baby brother for the first time, and as the owl called out, a fourth memory was relived as it took flight towards a full moon. And that is the third and final story I will be sharing with you on this episode of The Writer's Bookshelf. So once again, thank you to each and every one of you who has listened. Get in touch if you want to do. Tell me what you're doing. Keep the writing. And more importantly, yes, tell your friends about the Writer's Bookshelf podcast. And if you like what you've been listening to, I will certainly be speaking to you on the next episode. Enjoy the love, enjoy the world, just keep writing and spread your wonderful words of magic. And if you want to find out a little bit more about me, go to the website. It's daviddriverauthor.com. So wherever you are in the world, thanks for listening and we will speak soon. Bye for now.